Well, good morning, all. Most of you know I've been away for 2 months, so it's nice to be back. I'll certainly be home all through Christmas, and I'm working on a big writing project, which I am extremely pleased to say is going well, which means, yes, thank you. I'll take it. Which means that eventually this will stop. And we'll go on to something else, that's all. This coming and going is what I mean. Well, I can't say that because I may come and go for other reasons. I don't want to make promises I can't keep. In any case, today we're talking about reincarnation. This evening, for those of you who want to, I'll talk more about what I've been doing. Today we're talking about reincarnation, which is just, it's such a great subject. It's absolutely, there are certain principles that are involved in what in India is called Sanatana Dharma. Every true religion, when I say true, every religion that is consistent with the most ancient principles, one way or another reflects the ideas of Sanatana Dharma. Sanatana Dharma is a Sanskrit word, and people would describe it as the eternal religion. I prefer the an equally valid definition, which is called simply that which is. And India is the only continuous culture from ancient times. All of its contemporaries, Egypt, Babylon, everything else came and went. But India has always been the same for as far back thousands of years as people can ever know. And it's been through ups and downs. But the essential culture has always been the same. And it's always been based on Sanatana Dharma, which is, when you define it as that which is, it becomes a very interesting way to look at the world and to look at the understanding of things. All of this diversity that we have of religions and different dogmas and so on all come afterwards. First, there is that which is, and then a great soul will come and perceive that which is, and he or she will explain it in terms that the culture that they've incarnated into, the disciples they're trying to help, the world mission that they were assigned, they will talk about it insofar as human language can understand it. And then people of lesser realization will gradually take the revelation of their master and they'll begin to adjust it according to what makes sense to them. And often, mostly, it's sincerely meant. It's just we look at this and this is what we think it means. I recall reading that there was a convocation of biblical scholars and they actually all got together and they voted on which parts of the Bible that they were going to authorize and keep. And then that was the authority. This is what Jesus taught because out of 80 of us, 60 of us thought this was true. Well, either it is or it isn't. It's not a question of, from my point of view, I think this is valid. So the tradition of India has always been that it's always there. And then people's consciousness is capable of seeing more or less of it. And certain principles are fundamental to Sanatana Dharma. One is the guru-disciple relationship. And another is these bodies that we wear. What does death mean? What does birth mean? Where did we come from? Where are we going? I mean, it can't be voted in. It just can't be a question of I prefer not to. Well, you may reincarnate, but I think I won't, you know, because I don't believe in it. But either we do or we don't. And there comes a, and it's a very mysterious process, really, sort of how we come to understand these things. And all of us have a cycle that we've been through because you're all sitting here, depending on what culture you were born in or... But it does just because you're born in something, sometimes that's just all the more reason to reject it rather than the opposite. One of the people in our community who's half Indian, half American, not here, he's in the greater Anant, half Indian, half American, his father just shook the dust of India off his feet and was so glad to get to America and has been absolutely horrified that his half Indian son has completely embraced everything that he ran away from. It's just a nightmare, you know? Who can say where all this comes from? It's just we know something, not because there's any logic to it, but just because we know it. And this is the great mystery of self-realization, really. When I first heard about the idea of reincarnation, all of this teaching, I had no exposure to it until I was completely exposed. I mean, what to say is I wasn't raised in it. But at the age of 19, somebody handed me a book, and just as soon as I opened it, it was like, oh yeah, this is it. This is exactly what I've been looking for. Nobody had to persuade me. It was just there for me. And reincarnation was such an interesting idea. Not that I had any memories or anything, but it just made so much sense. So much that didn't make sense made sense if birth was not the beginning and death wasn't the end. And if there was a progress, something that we're going to, that is bigger than us to get to in this little tiny cycle. One of my friends, when her mother was dying, when she was in her 80s, she was a very sweet, the mother was very sweet, and so was the daughter. And she was just sort of with her mother, and her mother said, I thought as I would get older, I would get wiser, but I didn't. We just think somehow we're going to get wiser. I hope when I have another body and I'm a child, I'll recognize that adults are just the same as me, just bigger, you know, and they can drive and they can take themselves places. But from the perspective of being a grown-up, you realize that, no, I don't automatically get wise. Either I apply myself to understanding things on a deeper level, or else time just passes. That's all. I was walking somewhere and I saw a man, big, powerful, you know, gym-created muscles on his leg. And he had the emblem of a basketball team on the back of it. I mean, one of the NBA teams. You know, he's made his person. He's not even a player. He's just a fan. I thought, I don't know what I thought. I tried not to think any of it. I tried not to think any of it. I tried to think we're all children of God and we're just moving in our own way and we're looking at what we know and here we are. This is all we can do. Well, when I first had the idea of reincarnation and when it was first introduced to me, I didn't resist it, but I'm too independent to take anybody's word for it, really. But I tried to look at the world as if it were true. Like, what if the explanation for this affinity, for this aversion, for this terrible consequence of behavior that doesn't seem to be caused by anything I can remember, or this person's tremendous good fortune. I read about a family where two people in the family won the lottery. Can you imagine the karma of that? Mary Weber wins every raffle she enters. Seriously, Swamiji almost suggested her that she ought to really make a profession out of it. She ended up on a monkey. She ended up on the float for the Rose Parade. She and her husband got to be on the float for the Downton Abbey Rose Parade or something like that. It was a raffle. It was out of hundreds of thousands of people, but she always wins. Just very casually, yes, of course, she always wins. You know, how does that happen? You know, there's just forces at play. And, you know, people who are in the right place at the right time or the wrong place at the wrong time. You know, if we look at it as a bigger story, where when this one ends, we just simply pick it up and start over again. And we end up being something that we don't know where it comes from. But once we understand that this endless cycle, and I observed when, I noticed when Rita was reading it, it's called the spiral staircase. And that's really what we have to understand, what we're working with. Now, here's the point of reincarnation. Everything about the spiritual path is to not lose hope. Everything about life is to not lose hope. Think about that. My name means hope, so this is something that's really particular to me. We did a treasure hunt a whole long, long time ago. A girlfriend of mine who was extremely clever was staying with me. And we just, this was at Ananda Village, like, I don't know, 1975 or something. We did a community-wide treasure hunt in which she wrote out all these extremely clever clues in relation to things. This is all about, you'll hear it in a minute, but one of the clues was, hope is where you find it. And I had it in my pocket. The whole time. Nobody guessed it. But it being my name, and having been my name that Swami gave me since 1972 or something like that, it's a quality that I've given a lot of thought to. And if we think about the cycles of our life, we always realize that if you lose hope, you know, that's when everything really comes to pieces, doesn't it? You know, now I'm completely, it's over. You know, this, I'll never be a success, I'll never have my health again, this relationship is not going to work out, I'll never be a mother, or the child I got is a lemon, and he'll never be what I want him to be. One of my friends are having a terrible time with their teenage son, just terrible. And they just went to Swami, you know, she's weeping, he doesn't know what to do. They just, what are we going to do with this boy? And Swami just looked at them like this, and he said, well, sometimes you just get a lemon. You know, and he just, they were just horrified. And he just let that rest for a while. And then he said, but I don't think so. But yeah, sometimes you do. Like, just because I conceived of this child and carried it, it's you didn't make its destiny. You didn't make its karma. As Swami said, the physical body makes a vehicle for the soul and its destiny. But the parents don't make the soul or its destiny. And sometimes, for karmic reasons, you do get a lemon. But in any case, you know, all of this is when we lose hope is when we really just don't know what to do. That's when people commit suicide. That's when they become drug addicts. You know, just all these different things that people do in one way or another to desperately try to close down their own consciousness because they don't see any hope for their consciousness anymore. Well, see, with reincarnation, it's completely different because the story never ends until it's happily ever after. You know, time is annoying, I admit that, because these days just seem to last a really long time. Weeks, months, years go by. Swamiji tells the story in his own autobiography about one of his fellow monks who had a wonderful, loving heart, Norman Paulson, but he took things seriously, and he had he was very dramatic, and he got real depressed, and he was just real depressed one day, and Swami, who was a brand new disciple, well, they were all brand new disciples, but he was so excited, he said, you know, how long can it last, 40, 50 years? You know, so you're depressed for 40 or 50 years. You know, at the end of it, it's all going to work out. He said, for some reason, that wasn't comforting to me. Swami, it seemed like, really, like, this is great news. Because time is a little weird. And time is what takes hope away from us. And so reincarnation is, on one hand, it's the doorway to eternal, literally eternal optimism. But it also requires a lot of tapasya. It requires a lot of kshama, which is this deep, patient recognition that I just need to stand in my center until this works itself out. Because if it's a spiral staircase, also, you know, it's every step is connected to every step before. And even though you may be at a point where you no longer remember, there is this continuous flow of energy. I was struck when we did the play The Meeting of the Masters, and the part of Kamala, this woman who met Master when she was a young girl, because her mother became a disciple and Master became sort of part of their family. And Kamala has always been famous. She was a direct disciple of Master. She died some decades ago, not that long ago, maybe 20 years. But she was famous when we were all young devotees because Kamala had prayed for all her karma to be worked out in this lifetime, which is a prayer. I'm really even sorry I said it, you know. I would never pray it. I don't have the courage. But the way she actually articulated it was far more interesting. She asked that all her karmic debts be settled. Okay, because this is what we're working with. Reincarnation is, we're all manifested from the divine, and this force from God himself just sort of sends us out to see what we would do with the illusion of freedom. In the very, very early years of Ananda Village, when it was so small and there were just a bunch of us running around like crazy people just trying to make this thing happen, I remember thinking that maybe this was a very sophisticated experiment with lunatics, giving them this illusion of enormous freedom and that we're actually being observed. And what we really, I know there's been a movie made about that since then, but you know, just like if you give all these people in the asylum the feeling that they're running the asylum, what will they do? You know, and it's really, it's not so foreign, is it? But God manifests us out to see what we'll do, and it's a test. I mean, it's a simple test, or it's an experiment, which is, will you still love me? It's a test of our capacity to love. And when we think in terms of human relationships, because everything that happens on the cosmic level, it also is acted out here, because it's very hard for us to... it's very hard for us to understand it just as an abstraction. We have to act it out. We have to have children. We have to love those children. We have to have husbands and wives and siblings and friends, where we get to act out all these different experiences of, will I still love you? Will you still love me? Which is a tricky business, because we're very attuned to love being about how I feel when it comes to me in a certain way. And to have the kind of greatness of heart, and don't anybody feel bad for not having it, but to have the kind of greatness of heart that our love is unconditioned by anything that happens. But we are manifestations of the divine, and that is the characteristic of the divine, pure, unconditioned love. So we're sent out to find out of what stuff are we made. Are we really capable of holding the power that is really us, which is nothing that happens is going to change my response of love. Not to you, to you, to you, or to the divine. And that's the entire exercise. And what happens is our real fulfillment, you know, the thing about the whole story is that we know we are meant not to suffer. We know we are meant to be in bliss. If we didn't know that, we'd be perfectly happy. You understand? There's something in us that's always saying, and, you know? And whether we act that out by murdering people, because we're just so mad at them because we think they're the cause of our problem. You know, I hope no one in this room is still capable of it, but it crosses everybody's mind every once in a while, doesn't it? You know, that the problem is so clearly you that if I could just eliminate you... I mean, that's the same thought. you know, I've had moments where I thought, just give me the loaded gun, let me try. I've never even held a loaded gun. I don't know what I would know, how I would know, but if I could just eliminate you, then everything would be fine. And we don't understand that that very thought, and this is where the word debt comes in. You see, it creates a debt. And if you think of it like this, we're standing at perfect center, we're at one with spirit. And then we try to get satisfaction by taking something that doesn't belong to us. However we do it, it's not really ours. You don't really owe it to me. You know, it's not like up to you to be good enough for me to love you. It's up to me to be good enough to love you. And whenever we act otherwise, we've created something lopsided. We've grabbed something that isn't really ours, and we have to just keep letting it go. When we misunderstand, you know, we have this terrible thing. Sometimes these awful habits set in. Thank God I don't hear it in this community very much, but I've heard it. You know, people do the training, and then they become disciples, and then they take Kriya initiation, and now I'm practicing Kriya, and I'm, you know, raising the Kundalini and moving all this energy through my chakras. And then people say, oh yeah, now your life is really going to get hard. No, now your life is going to get wonderful. But yes, you might have to start repaying all those debts. And what that means is, because I took something that wasn't mine, now something I think of as mine is going to be taken away from me. Because it all has to come back to zero. And so this is what happens to us. We climb this spiral staircase. We just have all these debts, these karmic debts we have to pay. And so we end up in, my, just the weirdest situations, isn't it? Our bodies fall apart, our lives fall apart. Our children are genuine lemons, and we just have to work our way through it. We have to love the lemon unconditionally, or we have to discover that it's just not what I thought it was supposed to be. There's nothing really wrong with it. It just is what it is. You know, Swamiji had this wonderful way of coming to peace about other people's suffering, because I thought for many years, he was above suffering. That was the only way I could think to say it. I just misunderstood. His heart was more tender than any heart. Just so tender. I recently had to take this long car trip because I was up in northern Washington. I don't think I've ever listened to Swami Kriyananda read Autobiography of a Yogi. If you haven't, I highly recommend it. And I just, when you're hearing him read it, and he reads it with such sensitive attention. There's so many places in that book where Master weeps. He's a self-realized master. He's an avatar. He has no karma. He comes only to help us, but he takes on the human condition. And the human condition is poignant, extremely poignant. You know, he weeps for his mother, he weeps for his brother. He didn't even like his brother all that much. I mean, in a certain sense, his brother Ananta, older, was really tough and hard on him. But he was so heartbroken when his brother was dying. He left India. He was in Japan when his brother died. He didn't want to be there when his brother died. So the poignancy of this world, it's not spiritual to be hard-hearted. So the balance is much more confusing. It's where we have to just not resist. You know, it's when people suffer, they're suffering. And as children, as spiritual children, people used to offer things like, I just remember I was in a situation and I was upset about someone and said, now don't be attached. I just looked at him like, what a stupid thing to say to me. Of course I'm attached. You know, that's why I incarnated. I'm filled with desires and attachments. Don't just say the obvious thing to me. That's just ridiculous. I am attached. Now what do we do? You know, how do we be ourselves and at the same time be moving up that spiral staircase? And what I was starting to say is that Swami had this way of thinking about suffering, which is you know, well, it's suffering that causes us to think more deeply about life, isn't it? You know, if everything is going just perfectly, why would you ask a question? You have to ask the question when it begins to break apart. There was a story, Mr. Black, who was one of Master's most advanced disciples, he was running a center for Master in Detroit. He said, "Master, all I get is the halt, the blind, and the lame." And Master said, "Oliver, they're your people." And it's really true. You know, we're the ones who come to God, aren't we? Because we've hit the wall on everything else. So one side of it is, when people are suffering, we should rejoice. Not unkindly. But yeah, you have to get more serious. Yes, you have to be disappointed. Yes, those things that you took wrongly have to be taken away from you. Those karmic debts have to be solved. And then Swami's other part of it is, then, you know, how when we've really been unhappy, how much we appreciate happiness when it comes, isn't it? And so Swami said, you know, that very intense suffering, how much greater will be the joy when you finally find the bliss of God? When you finally realize, I didn't really need that anyway. That was something I took that wasn't mine. Everything I have is here within me. And so we just keep climbing that staircase. And that spiral, we just come around and we try it again. And we try it again. And we try it again. But each time we always say about Ananda, we're just as poor as we ever were. We're just going bankrupt with more zeros now. You know, we're just spending more of all the money we have. You know, we're just living where we live. And so it is. We just keep coming around. Oh, a little more subtle about love. A little more subtle about friendship. A little more subtle about self-importance. A little more subtle about generosity. And each time it's not always easy, but it's really very simple, which is, okay, if you give it to me, it's mine, and if you give it to me, you have to give me the power to overcome it. And that's the beauty of it. Swamiji wrote this letter to someone I read recently. I know how much God is asking of you, but it's your karma, and if you have the courage to face it, he will give you the strength. That's the power, and we have all the time in the world. Go ahead and fail. Fail for 40 or 50 years if you want to. Fail for 40 or 50 incarnations if you want to. Sooner or later, the longing of the heart, the love of God and God's love for us, he'll pull us out and we'll be free. God bless you.